As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I just can't believe this. That's the bottom line here, Bob. I can't believe... play the Brian Kelly thing. I can't believe we're sitting here again. Again! Bob, he's thoughtfully non-rhythmic there with when he slams his hand. I want you to try to slam your hand right when he does. I want you to be prepared for this. You ready?
Okay.
All right, here we go. Hear it. You missed it.
I did. No, I'll
do it again. Are you ready this time? Yeah. Slam your hand when he does his. Here we go. Missed it. Bob just hurt his hand. Give me a shot at it, Limits. I must have this.
I missed it by a half a second.
I got it. I'm ready. Go.
No. No, you were too early.
Was I early?
5-yard penalty. Move him back.
This is a disaster. I mean, there I go again. I didn't mean to do that. It's April 20th, and they have to go 81-58 to get to the wild card number from last year. 81-58, Bob. And again, Saturday felt like rock bottom. After the PR disasters and the start that you had and the realization that Charrington had put together an awful lineup and roster, no matter what the deep below the surface level stats might tell you, it felt like, I don't want to say a last chance, because there's still going to be feel-good moments. There always is in a baseball season. We could see in a couple months a rotation that starts with Skeens, Keller, and Jones.
And Chandler.
That's what I meant. I meant to put Chandler in there, yes. And I think that's what Bob Nunning's counting on. He's counting on that to ride into next season. You know what I mean? It's just, there's going to be feel-good moments, but it feels like...
But it's another wasted year of Paul Skeens.
Yes.
And that's the bad part about it.
And who could ever predict whether those three guys, Skeens, Jones, and Chandler, how much time in their entire Pirates career are they going to be here, healthy, and at the top of their games together? You know, I think of Wood and give me the other guy from
Pryor
from
Wood
the Cubs.
And Pryor. It didn't last that long.
It's just you get a small window, especially right. In this market, you get a small window. And pitchers are getting hurt more than ever. It's happening. The opportunity's here right now, or was right now, this past off season. If Bob Nunning was ever going to splurge on one player, Bob, one guy to put in his lineup, this would have been it. And it didn't need to be a $200 million player. It could have been, $17 million a year for a couple of years.
Yeah, they have plenty of guys they could have gone to, and you have to make that commitment. And if it takes you overspending a tad because you've created this narrative that people don't want to come here, if that's the case, then overpay for it. Get them back. Do what you got to do.
And finally, they have a feel-good moment. Man, that made national news. If you looked on ESPN.com on Saturday, it showed Pirates fans lined up across the bridge. Ready for this Skeens bobblehead. News got out that Bob Nunning was going to give everybody a bobblehead, not just the first 20,000. And then
why wasn't that the case from the very beginning? You knew you were going to get a sellout.
I don't know. I guess the moment might have hit him. I commend him for that. Good.
Yes, yes. But if you're going to have a bobblehead and you know it's going to be a sellout, why limit it to 20,000?
I don't know, Bob. That's a good question.
Shohei Ohtani had one. There were similar lines stretching all over Chavez Ravine, but everyone got one.
That's a good question, actually, but one I don't have the answer to.
I'm just thinking, if you're gonna, people are going to want it.
Right.
So is the idea to create a demand for tickets? I think you don't need a demand on that night. You know you're going to get a sellout crowd.
I mean, that is a sight I've never seen before, with a line like that outside PNC Park. Beautiful day. Skeens on the mound. And then 20 minutes before the game, you have your most popular player, arguably, along with Skeens, Andrew McCutchen, taking a shot on social media. 20 minutes before the game. Is that what you said, Limits?
Yes.
He's not in the lineup. They don't score a run. McCutchen's unhappy. And by the end of the night, which included the Exxon Valdez at third base, signaling for timeout after he needlessly runs there and getting tagged out, even though that was the wrong call. It happened. It seemed fitting. And by the end of the night, with Mike Ribelgo just watching this all happen again, Bob, you have the sellout crowd, or a good portion of it, chanting, sell the team. I mean, how on that night does everything go so wrong? It was amazing.
So it happened yesterday at the RBC Heritage Golf Classic. I wasn't aware of this, but Pony told me about it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, Justin Thomas hits a tee shot, and you hear, fire nutting.
I did hear that. Like, yeah.
Do you remember when that stuff started to surface everywhere on Matt Canada?
Yes.
I mean, it didn't matter what you were doing or what game you were at.
Right.
Somebody would... So it's getting to that level.
It's getting ugly. And again, we're sitting here on April 21st. And I can picture scenes on some of these the rare nights. Like yesterday was a beautiful day and nobody was there, right? So I can picture scenes upcoming soon. We're not even close to the hottest days of summer. Like a bobblehead night, like a fireworks night, where you're going to have 38,000 people angrily chanting, sell the team. I mean, that's where they're careening towards,
Yeah.
412-928-9370. We'll hear from Ben Cherington in a moment. I don't think he did himself any favors on his show yesterday. Limits, who's next?
All right, let's start with Matt in Twinsburg.
Twinsburg?
Twinsburg, Ohio. Yes, it's a real place.
Thank you.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Joe.
What's up?
How you doing today?
Good.
I am so exasperated. Shelty he needs to go for an abundance of reasons, but my biggest thing, and I watch all these games because I'm a glutton for punishment. He's the worst game situation manager I've ever seen in my life. Now, I'm more Earl Weaver in terms of bunting guys over, but since the extra inning thing changed, he won't bunt a guy to third base. You can score a run without even getting a hit, which is what this team really needs. He won't bunt anybody over, ever. And again, it happened again yesterday in extra innings after they battled back. I'm so sick and tired of watching this team not play small ball when they are the smallest ball team in the league.
Bob, that's a great point. And like you, is it Mike?
Matt.
Matt, I apologize on Bob's behalf for that. I talked about this last Friday. I said to Bob Walk, I said, Bob, am I losing my mind? It's not just the Pirates. Why won't anybody bunt somebody over when you have the ghost runner on second? And his contention was that nobody knows how to bunt anymore, but I'm still with you. Then teach them. If you're a small ball team sitting here with 16 home runs, they're about to play the Angels and the Dodgers, who have combined for 70 home runs, and the Pirates are sitting here with 16. I agree with him, Bob. If you're going
to
you're forced to play.
If you can't bunt, at least know how to move him methodically to third by going to the opposite side of the field.
Yeah.
And that's what Cleveland did in the top of the 10th inning, and they set up a sac fly to win the game.
I thought that was a very astute call, Bob, of an another exasperated fan.
That's what you get when you go to Twinsburg. You get double the pleasure.
Have you been to Twinsburg?
No.
Maybe our friend Twin Cities over here should go. Limits? Have you ever been?
My sisters have gone multiple times because every year they have Twins Fest up there, and I have twin sisters. So they go to Twinsburg. At least they have for the last couple of years to go to that Twins Fest.
Hold on. I was going to make a joke of sorts about how something with twins involved there. That really is why it's Twinsburg?
Well, they have a festival there. I don't know if that's why they have the festival, because it's Twinsburg, Ohio, and it's cool to have a Twins Fest there.
Bob, were you aware of this?
Yeah, it's a real thing.
That there's Twins Festivals?
Why wouldn't that surprise you? I mean, there are a lot of twins out there, so they have a day.
Sure. And I know that there's twin support groups for parents when you have twins. My friend Rich Williams and his wife had twins a long time ago. I wasn't aware that there were twin festivals.
I'm
sorry.
What would you do and Susie do if you had quadruplets?
Oh, man. Is there quadruplet festivals in Quadruple, Ohio?
Your golf game would go away. You wouldn't be able to play.
Yeah, that would be. You'd be busy.
Members of the Minnesota Twins show up at Twins Fest.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Maybe.
They should.
Twinsburg, Ohio.
What about triplets? Do you think they have Triplets Fest anywhere?
They might. Is there a Triplets Festival, Bob, that you know of?
In Triplettsburg, Ohio? I don't know. Do they have a place like that there? I don't know.
What about for only child? You know, your only child?
Yeah. You could have a festival for that.
They need it.
Yeah. That's interesting to me. Twinsburg, Ohio.
Yeah. It's
and,
real
and the whole dynamic of twins is interesting. I remember asking, who was it? Pouncey. In the Steelers locker room, I said, because his brother Mike, they're identical, I think. Are they not? I think they are.
Yes,
they are.
You can't tell them apart.
So I've said, is it true these stories, like if something were to go wrong with him right now, would you get like, could you sense it from, you know, thousands of miles away? And he laughed and said, no, none of that. But you definitely are connected on a deep level.
Even when they lost weight after their playing days are over, they look the same, almost the same amount of weight. It's crazy.
I have a funny Pouncey story. When I was in Fort Lauderdale, right before the day before the Orange Bowl, I was walking around downtown Fort Lauderdale, and we went to dinner. And as I was walking out, sitting at the bar was one of the Pounceys. It was either Mike Pouncey or Marquise Pouncey, and I didn't know which one it was. I thought it was Marquise, but I didn't want to say anything just in case I called him Mike, and it was actually Marquise, and I felt bad about myself. Yeah.
I like that story, Limits. I wasn't paying attention because I got distracted.
Yeah, I know. You were looking at your
You've
phone.
You've been very distracted today.
The whole time.
So that is tough when you have two of them together. Not sure, or you're not sure if one, which one is it, and you don't want to make a commitment because you could be wrong. That's how identical they
are. Do you think the Pounceys ever went to Twinsburg, Ohio, Bob?
No, but if they're listening right now, they may be interested.
Next.
Let's go to Seth in Cranberry.
Seth, what's up?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just want to come on here and kind of complain a little bit and just say how sick of this crap I am of these terrible decisions year after year and mishandling of the prospects and waiting. I'm getting told by everyone that I complain to, oh, next year. I've been getting told that for the past 4 years, and every single year we call someone up. At this point, we're supposed to have the rebuild supposed to be done at this point. Brian Hayes and Henry Davis and Jack Sawinski and all these guys are supposed to be all-star level players, and they're not. And it's because of how bad we handle these players in the minor leagues and these terrible decisions everyone makes. And, I mean, you look at other teams around the league, like the Nationals. I have friends who are Nationals fans and Orioles fans, and I get made fun of by them for being Pirates fans. And you look at them, they blew up the team around, you know, the same time the Pirates did. And they're looking pretty good right now. You look at the Cubs. I know the Nationals aren't looking good right now, but you look at their future. Mackenzie Gore is amazing. Wood and C.J. Abrams and Dylan Cruz, they're going to be good. You look at the Cubs. They blew up the team after the Pirates did, and now they're sitting at the top of the NL Central. They're looking good.
See, Kyle Tucker was one of those guys I thought the Pirates could have been legitimately in on.
Sure. Overpay him and bring him
in. They needed an outfielder, and he is that guy. So that's a good point.
Well, his other good point is, and I think he was making this point, is that try some other people. I don't want to go crazy because it's always the backup quarterback or the prospect that everybody wants, but Matt Gorski was a second round pick. Correct me if I'm wrong, Limits. Was he not?
He's only 27.
Was he a second round pick, Bob? I think he was. He's 27. He crushes AAA pitching. Last year, he had 23 homers, an 841 OPS, in a full season, basically. He crushed the ball in spring training, and he's off to a good start again this year. Like, and they needed a first baseman. Well, why isn't he on the team? Why am I watching Jack Sawinski at the plate? Why am I watching, and to his credit, the Exxon Valdez has actually had some hits lately. But why not Gorski? Was he a second-round pick? Help me out here. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I think I have the same question. And again, I look at what happened, not so much in spring training, but the AAA season. He put up, like you said, 23 home runs, a good OPS. Why is that guy not given a chance when they've run out just about every option that they could find at first base?
Yeah, he was a second-round pick in 2019. I'm baffled, Bob.
I don't understand why. It should at least give him a shot.
Is there some horrible flaw that I'm missing? I don't care if he's a good fielder. I don't know if he is, frankly. It couldn't be worse than having a 5'9 first baseman, though.
Well, I mean, for whatever reason, when was he drafted? Do you know?
It wasn't like Andy was Mark Grace around the bag either.
Second round pick in 2019.
Yeah,
so he was a
300.
He was a Charrington pick. Is that correct?
No, he would have been the last of the Huntington.
Maybe that's why.
Are you sure about that?
Charrington's first draft was 2020.
Who'd they take? Gonzalez?
Yes, okay. First round.
All right. Well, whatever. Well, that might be it then. But what's the problem here? When you're desperate for a first baseman and you have a guy that's crushing the ball, a guy who came, by the way, into spring training and won the competition for first base, if there was a competition for first base, he won it. And now he's hammering the ball at AAA, and he was a second-round pick, which tells me if the Pirates hadn't taken him there, he was going to be a top three-round pick in the major leagues.
And he's been in Indianapolis now for two, three seasons.
Like, what are we doing here?
It's not like he needs extra time to
develop. And he's 27, and they have guys older than that on this roster right now playing and doing nothing. Why would you not give him at least a shot? And I don't even think he's on their 40-man roster, is he?
I don't know. And that's not saying that I think Matt Gorski is the savior. It's saying that when you have a team of this, a roster of this, when you're rolling through the Edward Olivares's of the world last year and Connor Joe goes a month and a half or 2 months without an RBI and Rowdy Tellez, you know, goes 200 at-bats with one home run to begin the season and everything that we've seen, my God, with Jiwon Bae and Jack Sawinski and everything else we've seen, you can't give a second-round pick a shot when he earned it?
And he's not even on the 40. That's the thing. Like, why not? What move are they afraid to make? DFA, Jiwon Bae?
Tell me some
of
the guys on the 40. Tell me the bottom, like what you would consider the bottom 10 or 5 position players on the 40-man roster. Give me some.
Yeah, I'm pulling up it right now just to make sure that I have it fully under grasp. But overall, when you look at their roster, there are small little pieces. Okay, here we go. I would say the likes of Leover Peguero at this point. Like,
what happened to him, Bob?
I asked you that last week. He's one of those guys they prompted up, gave him a shot, now he's disappeared.
Chase Shugart?
Well, they just acquired him.
Do you really need him, though?
No.
Give me some position players' limits.
Sungjae Chang, who they just put on the 40 and ultimately just made his major league debut.
Yeah.
He's on there. Nick York in the minors is on the 40-man roster. Joey Wentz in their bullpen, who they rarely use. Tommy Pham could be DFA'd at this point to be able to have Matt Gorski on the roster.
So they won't do that because that would look bad for Ben Cherington.
Well, here's another thing with Peguero. He's 24, and last year he was respectable at the plate in AAA. This year he's off to a 330 start with an 831 OPS. I'm speechless. Why isn't he here?
I don't know. You never hear his name at all. It's not being mentioned. I don't know the answer.
Next.
Let's go to Terry in the car.
Good morning, Terry. Although we're creeping closer to afternoon. How are you?
Good, good. My head's spinning from all the things being said. Just a piggyback on one of the things that was said by the earlier caller. I played ball, college ball, back in the early 70s. I'm 69. And one of the things that strikes me as I look, and I'm not an expert, but playing college ball, you learn a little bit. One of the things, even on my high school team, we all knew how to bunt. I batted third, but everybody on the team knew how to bunt. No, like Bob Walsh says, no one knows how to bunt. When you had two strikes, you knew how to protect the plate. Meaning if the ball was outside 1 inch or 2 inch, you would swing at the ball. You wouldn't look at the ball. And it goes on and on, fundamentals. I was a shortstop. I went out and I took so many throws from the outfielders. I was the cutoff guy. Throw it into home plate, no problem getting people on. The fundamentals drive me absolutely insane. The second thing is, listening to Cherington, I finally realized he is artificial intelligence. The answers he gives is not human. They're not baseball. And that's the problem. He goes into all these computers and statistics, on and on and on. Get baseball players. Get people with baseball IQ. And don't worry about the launch angles. Don't worry about all these things that are irrelevant. You need baseball players. Maybe they want to fight in the dugout like Billy Martin teams did. They won because they wanted to win, because they had players that knew how to play the game.
Yeah. Man, I hear you on all of that, and I appreciate the call. Bob, I get it why people don't know how to bunt anymore. It's not the way you get to the majors, et cetera. There's teams that don't need to bunt. If you're the Pirates and part of your plan is to run a lot, steal a lot of bases, win in the margins, which is what we heard, then part of spring training should have been, yeah, we're going to, in extra innings, for example, bottom of an inning, we're absolutely bunting guys over. Might even bunt home, by the way, with a squeeze play here and there. We're making sure we get the runs in. We're making sure we know how to bunt. We're making sure that we're fundamentally sound. I don't see any of that. And that reflects on the coaching staff, the manager, absolutely the players. They should know, for example, to hit a cutoff, man. You learn that when you're four. But the problem is when they don't do it, there seems to be no accountability.
No, that's or hustling. I heard Greg Brown the other day describe O'Neill Cruz not hustling out of the batter's box. He hit a ball to the wall and ended up at first base. I'm sorry, but that cannot happen. And if you tolerate it, then other people see it. If you permit it, then you promote it.
That's a very good phrase, Bob.
But it's
That's
true.
Almost a bumper sticker. Did you hear that, Limits? If you permit it, you promote it. Did you just come up with that?
My father used to tell me that.
I love that.
That's a good phrase.
It's true. But that, you can extend that to all walks of life or everything.
Sure.
Whatever you do, if you permit it, you're going to promote it, and that's what they're promoting.
Right.
If nobody's going to run, and I'm sorry, I would make it very clear to my players, there is no excuse. I don't care who you are, how much you make.
Right.
This is how the rule goes, okay? So don't come to me afterwards and you're complaining. If you don't run hard on everything, you will not play the next day.
And other teams do it. That's the crazy part. Like the Yankees have done it. The Braves. The Braves guy, Snicker, actually didn't do it the other night. And Acuna piped up and said, hey, I was benched for this a couple years ago. Why isn't this guy getting benched?
That's what I'm saying. It becomes now a problem because you haven't taken care of it.
Right.
And they shouldn't do that. I don't care who you are. And it became obvious that O'Neill Cruz was not running hard out of the base. Maybe he needed to be off his feet.
Well, there's been multiple. Yeah, maybe he needed to be off his feet. You're right about that. There's been multiple instances this year of bad fundamental baseball and multiple instances of no accountability for it. Whatsoever.
Getting him off his feet.
Yeah. Let's hear from Ben Cherington, and then we'll get your calls and finish up this hour and move on to football for a bit. I was listening to this driving to play golf, if you can believe that, Bob, yesterday.
How can I not believe that?
And was just flabbergasted. Ben Cherington seems like a good guy. He really does. He's got a World Series in his past. He does, but he seems to have an incredible knack for saying exactly what fans don't want to hear and saying it in such a way that if I were a fan, I would turn off the radio or become enraged. He sounds like a lawyer working a case. He's telling people exactly what they don't want to hear. He doesn't seem relatable at all. This is him on surface level stats compared to the deep analytics and how apparently he expects guys like Tommy Pham and Canario and Frazier and Sawinski and Well, I don't have an hour. All these guys to hit.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about offense and believing that there could be better days ahead based on some of the things that we're seeing under the hood. It basically comes down to there's two things. There's the actual outcomes that happen in the game, the things we see. Did that ball fall in for a hit? Did it not? Did that ball get through the infield? Did it not? Did he strike out? Did he walk, et cetera? All the things that we see. And ultimately, that is the most important stuff because that's actually the things that are happening in the game that add up to wins and losses, and we want to win. So those are what we call like the surface outcomes, the things that actually happen. And then underneath that, we can look at what we believe is the more predictive performance. So that would be instead of the actual, you know, outcomes that happen on the field, we would have a measurement of what we think is happening and how we would predict that to play out over time in the outcome.
Does he think, you know, Jim in section 208 wants to hear that?
I was trying to listen hard. I couldn't really understand the predictive thing underneath the surface.
Well, there's the things we actually see. Yes, there are. The team on the field striking out more than any other team. Making throws to the wrong bag. Trying to get to third in meaningless and risky situations when you're trying to make a comeback late in a game. Dropping a ball that's an easy double play ball like they did about five games ago. Striking out all the time, not moving runners, not hitting the cutoff man. And if he's saying that these things, we believe the more predictive performance is under the hood. I could have predicted Adam Fraser's performance. I just need a baseball card. Look what he's done the last couple years. Tommy Pham, Canario. I can do that in 2 seconds. What are we, Bob? Now we're mechanics looking under the hood?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't go that deep with it. I don't think people want to hear that analysis to the point where it supersedes what actually they see. The number one thing you should base your assessment on is what your players are doing up here, regardless of what the, you know, below the surface stuff tells me. They're not doing it. If there's below the surface stuff, then dig it up, mine it, and make sure they see it and throw it in their face.
What did his deep analytics team tell him about Brian De La Cruz? What did they have to say in those meetings where he thought it was a good idea to go out and get a guy that they were going to put at the cleanup spot, which they did, only to come to learn, and I guess this was what everybody saw, right? Not right. Under the hood. We all saw that Brian De La Cruz can't play baseball, which is a minor problem if you're in the major leagues. I think the Braves just demoted him, didn't they? He can't play baseball. So what did your deep analytics team that's so mysterious and none of us can see, but they know. What did they tell you, Ben, about Brian De La Cruz, I wonder. Is there something I don't know about Tommy Pham other than what his baseball card says and that he's 37?
De La Cruz, 191 batting average and 47 at-bats, just 9 hits so far before getting demoted.
And I can tell you about IKF, too. And I like IKF as a Josh Harrison-type utility man. He's a very average shortstop defensively, and in his entire career, he's been an average to below-average hitter. So guess what I expect? And I didn't go under the hood. I didn't go on an archaeological dig. But he's played in the majors for many years now. And he's an average to below average hitter and about an average defensive shortstop. So guess what I think we're going to see, Bob?
That's what you see.
We're going to see an average to below average hitter ultimately. He got off to a pretty good start this season. And just an average shortstop. I'm guessing that's what we're going to see. Guess what we're going to see from Jack Sawinski, Bob, based on my deep analytical study.
You don't even have to go that deep. What you see is what you see, is that he has problems identifying pitches in the zone, which means he takes strikes, fall behind. And
he
then
can't hit. He strikes out all right. The time, and he makes bad plays in the field.
And I really had high hopes for him after his first season here.
Yeah. I bet you I have a good guess on what G1 Bay would do if he got back here, too.
Do you think he'd try to steal second 3 times and not be able to get there?
I don't know. But I can tell who is advising Ben Charrington. Ben, that's not what anybody wants to hear.
Operations department. And again, I would, you know, if you hire a lot of the guys who are analytics in nature,
yeah,
you're going to get probably the same kind of conversations. You're not going to get the baseball-driven, hardcore, been around, seen that, done that, guys who would say, yeah, we don't need that.
They had the first overall pick in the draft, which you put enormous, you use every little facet of your organization to analyze. What did your deep analytics tell you about Henry Davis as a hitter? And maybe he still will be one. I'm still holding out hope. But man, it sure looks like Ben Cherington and his army of analytics experts were dead wrong on that one too. Man, I wish we had better news coming off this weekend. But Bob, it was a disaster. The second time in two weekends they were swept at home. Now they go on the road and they got the Angels, who are way better than anybody expected, and the Dodgers. Now, there have been some strange series over the past couple of years where the Pirates have fared very well against the Dodgers.
Like 5 out of 6.
And I can't wait to watch Paul Skenes pitching in L.A. Can you? That's going to be a spectacle.
Yeah, I think that'll be awesome. But he'll probably have to go against, who knows if it's going to be Tyler Glasnow, which would be interesting.
He was hurt, I thought.
Was he hurt?
Yeah. Okay, well, right then, now it's supposed to be Skenes against Yamamoto, which is a nice little matchup.
Yamamoto's another one, a $300 million guy. How many of them do they have on that roster?
Yamamoto is 3-1 with a 0.93 ERA. That's a hell of a matchup. And Hunter Green might be the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah,
right,
he just
now
got rocked yesterday, though. He didn't look very good.
Yeah, but he is the fastest fastball in history, Bob, right now.
I know.
So there's other teams that have great young pitchers, too, and those teams have better lineups. But anyway, people unhappy, as you can imagine. Ben Cherington not helping matters with his surface level versus deep under the surface, 20,000 leagues under the sea. Bob, we could also go snorkeling. We've been talking about archaeology digs today, about being mechanics looking under the hood. We could be Jacques Cousteau, Bob, you and I. We could go looking for pirate hope in terms of stats if we go diving to the bottom of the ocean. You interested in that?
I'm not a deep diver there, and when it comes to oceans, no.
I just met a guy, an Uber driver in Florida, who was a deep sea diver. I'm like, the first thing I would be afraid of is I'm claustrophobic, and I'd be afraid my oxygen would run out. Isn't that what you'd be thinking about, Bob?
Oh, without a doubt. I'd always worry about that, and I always want to look over my back.
Yeah.
Is there a shark near me? Is there something that's going to...
He says he's not afraid of sharks, this guy. That they don't want to attack you, and they probably won't. It's the probably that I said I had a problem with.
It's one of those percentages that there is a percentage chance that something bad can happen.
Right. Let's hear one more thing from Cherington, if we must. More surface level stuff?
This was him explaining basically an example of what the surface level stats are.
So, for example, we all know this, right? A hitter can hit a line drive to the shortstop and it can be caught, and that's an out. That's an outcome. That's an out. But if he hits that ball that hard at that trajectory consistently over time, over the course of the season, history tells us it's going to add up to hits a lot of the time. So it's basically looking at what has actually happened and then what would we have expect to happen over the course of the season if a hitter continued to do these things.
I get it. And I think that that's an important tool. Like, I'm not going to bench. Let's just use Key Brian Hayes as an example. This guy's cracking the ball all around the field. I'm not saying he's doing that now. But if he was, I'd be saying if I was Shelton, you know what? He's hitting the ball hard all over the place. Let's keep playing him. That'll even out. I understand that. But when Cherington's talking about history as a guide and things like that, I would again ask, what's more predictive than past performance? And I would ask him, Jack Sawinski, Jared Triolo, Tommy Pham, Adam Frazier. I mean, if you have to dig 5 years into somebody's past to find something predictive, that's a problem. If you're Sawinski and you're still wanting 26 home runs that he got the 1 year and you've seen absolutely nothing since then, that's a problem. What's more predictive, Bob, than past performance?
Exactly. That should be the number one thing. Well, okay, using that as a predictive measure, what if a guy hits like 4 cue balls, but he finds the holes, just little nubbers that he knows how to hit and find holes. No
sure.
velocity that. So what are we supposed to make of that? Then he really doesn't hit it hard, but he knows how to find holes. Does that mean he shouldn't play because he doesn't hit it hard?
No, but I don't think they have that problem.
No, the point is, look at the results. That's all I can look at. I can't, you know, Valdez hit a line drive to right yesterday. That may count for something in their eyes, but he also took 2/3 strikes that were called balls.
Right.
So,
right.
Which is worse?
That's a, and that also should be deep analytics.
Yeah, he should have been struck out. None of them.
Right. What's more important there, that he ended up with a line drive or that he should have struck out twice? That's right. A great point. And I commend you for that, Bob.
Well, thank you.
They're 8-15. They're going to play the Angels, and suddenly Mike Trout has 8 home runs. He's right up there at the top of the league. The Angels are better than we thought. They're sitting here at 11-10. Just to have a winning record, they're better than we thought. After that, they have the Dodgers for 3 games, Bob. Then the Cubs at home for 3. Then the Padres for 3. How did they come out of that 3-6? How did they come out of that 12-game stretch? 4-8 or so?
I mean, like you said, there is a chance. All baseball teams go through winning streaks of some degree, even though bad teams and you know some of the good teams also go through bad things. The Dodgers started 8-0, and then they fell on a little some hard. So, but over the course of 162, you know the teams are going to rise up here. Can the Pirates actually do that against those quality of teams? Not when you're 8-15. You got to make up. The danger here is falling even further behind that. So that 81-58 mark you said that they need to get to be in position to get a wild card would have to be more like 89-50 46 or something, because these teams are good. They're going to be playing.
And I never rule out anything. It's sports. It's baseball in April. But the Pirates need to go 81-58 to get to 89 wins, which got you. You needed that to get a wild card last year. Give them a few more. Okay, 86 wins. Then you still have to win, 78-61. I can't believe that we're sitting here on April 21st.
It feels like the season's over. You like squashed a bug.
I'm timing that better. Let's take one more call to finish out the hour, shall we, Limits?
Well, I think we shall, and we shall go to Mount Lebanon, where Lucas wants to chime in.
Hi, Lucas.
Hey, guys. I love the show. Two quick points. One on kind of the Ben Cherington stuff. I will never apologize for Ben Cherington, so please don't take it this way. But there's a great book by Keith Law called Smart Baseball. What I like about it is the first kind of 3-4 chapters, he tells you why all the old stats are garbage, like batting average, RBI, ERA, things like that, and kind of how to handle and understand the new stats. So anyway, throw that out there for you. Great book. The second part.
Well, hold on. I'm going to jump in right there. I get it. And if I were running a baseball team, I would have analytics all over the place. I just read a great story about the Carolina Hurricanes GM too, and how they've gone to new heights with analytics. Totally get it. So you tell me what Ben Cherington was possibly thinking with Tommy Pham, who hit 206 for St. Louis last year. You tell me what he was thinking with Brian De La Cruz, who's now a step out of baseball, when he was their big acquisition. Please tell me what's going on in their analytics department where they could get all of these things so incredibly wrong when it seems obvious to the rest of the world based on the eye test and the deepest of analytics that he's bringing in subs.
Joe, you're 100% correct. I cannot defend Tommy Pham signing. He's awful. I'm a Padres fan, spent 14 years out in San Diego, and when he was with the Padres, he wasn't very good. And that was 6-7 years ago when he was 6-7 years younger, and he wasn't very good then. I mean, I think his last stretch of really good baseball was the Rays or the Cardinals. You know, we're pushing 8 to 10 years to talk about that. I don't know. I don't know how they use analytics inside their department.
Not well, but go ahead.
You're right. Yeah. The second part is, they have no identity. And my point on this is, we know they're not going to spend money, right? Their last multi-season free agent contract signing, I think, was 2016. I know the show's talked about it before, right? So we know they're not going to spend money. That is their history, right? They tell us, based off of their actions, that they're not going to sign a guy like Kyle Tucker. They're not going to sign a guy like Ha-Seong Kim, right? So if you are trying to pinch pennies, you know, maybe you're not going to have the slug. They have no slug on the team, right? But they also don't have any defense. Like, we see that. Like, you have IKF playing shortstop. You took your shortstop, you moved him to center field to get a very below average defensive center fielder now. And you see that all over the diamond. It's what is their identity, and how do you end up this far along in a rebuild to not have an identity? I think we could point to the Tampa Bay Rays and say they got an identity. They play really good defense. I went to the series when they came into town last year, and I know their center fielder, I think it was Series, no longer with the team, but he stinking dominated the Pirates that game that I watched. I mean, he was all over the field. Jose Siri, I think his name was, both defensively, got on base a couple times. You could tell they had an identity. It was speed, it was defense, and then you get some really young, good, talented arms, which we have at the Pirates, but we had nothing else. There's nothing else that you can point to and say, yeah, we got really good base running. No, the base running's awful.
Well, I think you make a good point there with the identity, for sure. And we know what they want their identity to be offensively, Bob. I think that's a scrappy, fast team that manufactures runs and wins in the margins.
But the margins are being blurred because their defense, if you're going to win by the margins, that means you have to be rock solid fundamentally. You can't be playing defense the way they do it or run the bases the way they do it. These are errors that will not allow you to complete games winning 3-2, 2-1 because you're making mistakes and unnecessary outs at third base, for example, 12 of them this year. That's too much.
Well, and this guy also talked about, you know, the ungettable players out there. How much did Kyle Tucker sign for this year?
1 year, $16.5 million this year.
$16.5 million. Now, I know there's the question of do people want to come to Pittsburgh, but if you tell Kyle Tucker, we'll give you $20 million for 1 year, I mean... Do you think he would have come here?
16 is a bargain. I thought he was going to get more than that. If I were the Pirates, I would have I've been much more aggressive.
Kyle Tucker on this team is transformative.
If you look at history, the history on him suggests that he's going to be a big difference maker on a baseball team. That's what his history suggests after years in Houston. So, you know, the bottom line there is look at results. Don't look at anything else. The results tell you what he's going to be. And I don't agree at all with Keith Law's assertion that those old school stats are garbage. I don't agree with that at all. You could make use of all of those kinds of things. Sure, you want to take it to this metric overload that we see. But don't forget, it still matters what your batting average is. It does. If you can get on base a lot, that all matters. There are basic statistics to back that stuff up. Hard hit balls, velocity, apex, launch angles. Okay, good. You have all the metrics you want. Try to teach someone how to improve their launch angle without striking out 100 times.
Right. Now, there are some free agents who haven't turned out. Christian Walker's one. I think Jock Peterson's another. But again, with some of these guys like Jock Peterson, I think he is going to hit, and he's going to hit home runs. And there's nothing, again, that's as predictive as past performance.